you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Mind Body Peak Performance with your host, Nick Urban. Last week, in episode 45 with Don Moxley, we briefly touched on a supplement called spermidine, which seems so promising that I decided to do another episode dedicated specifically to the supplement. And in this episode, Leslie Kenny from Oxford Healthspan joins us. Leslie is a Southern California entrepreneur and graduate of both Berkeley and Harvard, whose life was turned upside down when she was diagnosed with lupus and rheumatoid arthritis in her 30s. When her doctors told her that lupus had a life expectancy of 5 years and that rheumatoid arthritis could only be managed, not cured, she set out to optimize her health as best she could with safe, natural solutions. She went back to school at the University for Integrative Nutrition in New York City, became a bulletproof coach under health pioneer Dave Asprey, and took on health coaching clients worldwide. At the same time, she began helping life science academics at European universities, including Oxford, where she lives, to raise money for their discoveries. At a meeting with one such scientist, she learned about a natural compound called spermidine, abundant in natto, a traditional Japanese dish that she had grown up with. And as you'll learn later in the interview, why one scientist called it an anti-aging vitamin. But at the time, it wasn't available in the United States. So she decided to bring it to the US herself. Today, at age 56, Leslie is living proof that we can get better with age so long as we take responsibility for our health and meet our doctors halfway. I like several things about her product. First, the company is trying to procure the most possible sources of spermidine. So if you have an intolerance to wheat germ, which it's typically derived from, then that shouldn't be a problem. Also, this one contains special prebiotic fibers which get your gut bacteria, your endogenous gut bacteria, to produce spermidine also. So you get the 1-2 punch of getting it externally from diet and creating it internally. And if you decide to try the Oxford Healthspan spermidine product called Primadine, you can use the code URBAN10 to save 10%. Okay, on to our conversation with Leslie Kenny. Today, we're joined by Leslie Kenny, the founder of Oxford Healthspan. Leslie, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Nick. Lovely to be with you today.
Okay, let's start off with what unusual or non-negotiable things have you done today for your health and performance?
I woke up, had some hormone replacement therapy, first thing. That includes thyroid hormones, that includes DHEA, pregnenolone, HRT, which includes estradiol. Took my progesterone last night. And then I started with a continued fast, some morning spermidine, some MCTs, and collagen in my coffee.
Okay, we will cover spermidine mainly in this conversation. But how did you get interested in hormone replacement?
I'm almost 57 years old, and I think that any woman or man who goes through menopause or andropause just comes to a moment where they think things are not quite what they used to be before. And for me, that began with just feeling like I was brain fogged, a bit sluggish, noticing dry skin, and thought, it doesn't have to be like this. And speaking to my functional medicine doctor, who said, yeah, definitely not. Why don't we optimize you? So that's really where that that began.
Yeah, and a couple of those, I think it's DHEA, pregnenolone, and progesterone, maybe, I'm not sure. But they were a stack created by a famous researcher named Ray Peet. And it seems like it's gained a lot of traction these days.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he has been around forever. My goodness. I feel like I saw his stuff back in 2004 when I first began researching all of this. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So those that are watching this video will see your name in Zoom comes up as Oxford Longevity Project. Tell me about your background. What is longevity and why are you interested in it?
Well, longevity is a bit of a misnomer. Really, I'm interested in health span. I want to live a vital and strong life for as long as possible. I don't necessarily like the idea of just longevity for longevity's sake, while taking 20 different drugs, being in pain, not knowing where I am. And so really, it is a misnomer. But that said, longevity also can imply having a legacy. And I want to be vital enough to leave behind something on this planet that is my legacy. And for me, that really is this idea that we have the power to slow aging. And if we can slow aging, we also have the opportunity to avoid the aches and pains of aging, as well as the dark side of aging, which is illness and disease. So that's what the Oxford Longevity Project is about, introducing ideas and tools to individuals that will allow them to slow or inhibit aging so that they avoid the diseases of aging.
You must like all the new paradigm that aging is starting to be seen as a disease rather than an inevitability that we all must go through.
Well, yeah, I like the idea of it. I don't like the idea of it necessarily being seen as a disease. And the reason for that is a bureaucratic one. I don't necessarily want the FDA to get involved in this and say, oh, right. So if it's a disease, then there are a whole host of things that are natural and available to us right now, which can no longer be available because they need to go through clinical trials to prove their worth and be available as a disease, as you know, something that targets disease.
Okay, we'll talk about what this is in 1 minute, but do you think that would happen with spermidine?
Spermidine is everywhere. It is in every plant, every animal, everything, any living thing that we see is making it. Even when we're old, we make a little bit of it. And so I don't know how, I just don't think they can, because they would literally have to regulate our food, our entire food supply, right? So this occurs in our food. It occurs in greater quantities in some foods like fermented soybeans in greater quantities, and in other foods like peas in slightly smaller quantities. Mm-hmm. You can't regulate that, but they might try to regulate the synthetic versions of it. They might try to regulate the food derived versions, which contain a minimum effective dose, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like they could more easily ban supplementation or require prescriptions for supplementation than obviously. Yeah.
And I have looked at what's happened with N-acetylcysteine, which is one of my favorite glutathione precursors, and just thought, that's a bit of a shame. I didn't quite understand why they did this, having allowed it freely on the market for, I think, about 50 years.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been an interesting one. It was, about 6 months ago, 8 months ago at this point?
That's right. Luckily, here in Britain, we still have access to it, because I take that every day myself.
Yeah. Back before they banned it, actually, as they banned it and I realized it was going to be gone, I bought 400 grams or something. So I have enough to last me hopefully a lifetime, but.
Good. Well, you can always pop over to the UK if you need to get some more.
That too. Okay. So one thing I was excited to talk about with you is what you view as the latest tenets of aging.
I suppose what is most interesting is this idea that there are defined pathways down which we age. And there was a paper done probably around 2014 or 2016, which laid out these 9 different paths through which we age. And they include some obvious things such as stem cell dysfunction, loss of DNA protection, mitochondrial dysfunction, epigenetic changes, things like that, as well as a few others. And there is this idea that these do account for many of the reasons why we age. And if we can only push on those levers, we have within our control the chance to halt aging or slow it down considerably. And that is very, very exciting because before that time, everyone thought that aging was inevitable. And yet I think we all know that relative, that 90-year-old aunt who always gets up on the dance floor and just has so much vim and vigor. And then we see another relative who's 70 and hardly moves and maybe has a Zimmer frame and doesn't think straight, can't hear. So there are clearly different speeds of biological aging. So how do we as individuals harness the body's pace of aging and just rein it in? Well, these 9 pathways are the ones that have so far been identified. And just pushing on those is, I think, a large part of the key to slowing down aging. This does not mean to say that there aren't others. I think that we do need to think holistically, and I'm sure there are others that we have not yet identified, but these are the big ones right now.
I'm sure there's many others. And I guess, do you know how much of aging is explained by those 9?
That's the problem. We don't. And knowledge is always an imperfect thing. They always say, as soon as you believe you know everything, that's an indication you know nothing. Yeah. And so I think for us to say, well, it's just these 9 things, we don't know. And we don't know to what extent they control everything, but we know they control a lot of the illnesses that we know about already. And I think that in particular, the body's innate ability to heal and repair itself, when we lose that, and that's what stem cells do, then we lose a lot of the battle right there. So yeah, that stem cell dysfunction, correcting that is a big one, obviously. I mean, each one has a role. Telomere length, mitochondrial dysfunction, each one is important. There's so many.
Yeah. And these days, like stem cell therapy, platelet-rich plasma, PRP, those are both hot, as are a lot of the compounds that promise to activate a bunch of these different pathways. Like NMN is a big one, molecular hydrogen, bisetin,
bisetin, true, yeah, from strawberries, yeah.
Pterostilbene, there's a bunch of them. But today, like, I want to talk about spermidine because that's your forte. And it's one that I discovered only in 2021, and it seems to be like taking the longevity crowd by storm.
Well, it's obviously got a very catchy name, so it's not one you easily forget. But the reason for that name also holds a key to its importance. So it is found in semen, and it is there to actually protect the DNA that is brought to the egg for fertilization. When sperm is actually made, it's a very high reactive oxygen species moment. And so spermidine helps protect from that, but it's very tiny, and DNA can wrap itself around spermidine. Normally DNA would wrap around a histone bond, which is much bigger, and you just wouldn't be able to pack as many into, say, sperm. So that is the reason why it's found in such great quantities in semen. And it's also found in human breast milk. And these are 2 clues, I think, about when it is needed. It is especially needed for creating life, but also for ensuring life of the infant, sealing the gut lining, but also enabling the baby to grow. And infants, by the way, have the highest concentration of spermidine. That it is at that time that we have the greatest amount of spermidine in our bodies.
That makes sense. It doesn't just come from that also. You also can find it in, as you alluded to earlier, some whole foods.
Yes, of course. So you can find it in wheat germ. You can find it in soybeans. The pulses, for instance, have them. Sprouts will have them. Peas. And you can also find it in shiitake mushrooms. Fermented foods have it. And the best, the highest concentration of spermidine is in a long fermented Japanese soybean dish called natto. It's a delicacy, and it is linked to longevity in Japan because of the fact that it confers all of these wonderful health benefits. The main one being triggering autophagy or cellular cleanup and renewal.
And it also is an acquired taste, though.
Natto is an acquired taste, right? So it has a very strong, pungent smell. It has an unusual mouthfeel. I don't think my mother would agree, but you know, those little chunks of soy are kind of like, it's terrible. It sort of reminds me of when you are sick. And it is not a great mouthfeel. I am sorry to say, I don't love it. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of encased in these spider webs. So when you pull it apart, these sort of strings of webbing kind of come across. And my mother loves it. And a lot of my relatives love it. I have grown up with it, but in the same way that my relatives love chicken feet, which we know has high collagen content, but I've never been a fan of chicken feet. And I'm also not a super fan of the authentic long fermented natto, which is just a little too stringy and has too much of a weird mouthfeel for my taste.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. And I wouldn't want to necessarily add chicken feet for the collagen into my morning coffee either.
Exactly. Exactly. So I respect what it does, but it's not something I'm going to incorporate easily into my day-to-day routine.
Can you break down what is autophagy? Because that's a really important concept that I haven't covered as much in the show as I want to.
Autophagy is a Greek Greek word. So auto is self and phagy is eating. So it alludes to the fact that cells can actually eat up the bad parts of themselves, take the bits that are still good and recycle them and produce a brand new cell. As we age, our ability to trigger autophagy declines. And that results in an accumulation of less good performing or well performing mitochondria. Some people even call those zombie cells because they're sort of there, but they're not doing what they're supposed to do. They don't have the energy they did before, and they begin to infect the other cells around them. So what you want to do is have this regular process of cleanup and renewal. The body is so good at this. When we're young, if you hurt yourself, if you get a scrape on your knee or a cut, no one ever says, oh my God, that's terrible. You know, you'll have this forever. The body knows how to repair it. And yet as we get older, we begin to get these diagnoses. And I got this diagnosis at age 39. Oh, you have lupus. That's where your body attacks its organs. And you're going to have this forever. And there's no cure. Now you can leave the doctor's office. And if you can think about it in another way, well, wait a second, the body knows what to do when we're young. Is it possible that the body actually, if we gave it the right circumstances, that the body might be able to actually repair itself of these bigger things? Because when you think about it, when you're young, you don't get these, you don't get rheumatoid arthritis, you don't get heart disease, you don't get dementia. Why not? Right. So it's because one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons is autophagy. Mm-hmm. So there's a group at the University of Osaka in Japan that have identified a protein called Rubicon. And they say that as we get older, we collect Rubicon, and Rubicon inhibits spermidine. And spermidine is needed for autophagy. And without autophagy, you don't get this renewal and repair of cells, and cells are the foundation of every organ tissue in our body.
Yeah. If you can't clean up your cells over time, you're going to go down. But what else? I mean, autophagy also has benefits that I've seen countless user reports of online about skin, hair, nails, like all kinds of different things that you wouldn't necessarily expect.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Well, so autophagy definitely helps with better production of cells. Spermidine itself is separate to autophagy, is very important to proliferation of tissues and cells. And that's why, again, when we're infants, that's why we have the highest quantities then, because we need to grow quickly. But if you think about, you know, your hair, your skin, and your nails, these are highly proliferative cell areas. So the scalp has lots of blood vessels. It's constantly turning over. And we can see the health of our skin from, you know, overnight. We can see it change. Spermidine is necessary for that proliferation. And if you don't have it, then, you know, wounds don't heal quite as quickly. Hair isn't as glossy as it could be. It doesn't grow as fast, and maybe even you aren't able to keep the hair follicle in the growth phase, which is the only time when pigmentation happens. So then you might see more gray hair at that point of time in time.
What made you decide that you and Oxford HealthSpan wanted to create a spermidine product?
Well, I really wanted my mother to try spermidine instead of eating natto, because my stepfather used to complain about the smell of her natto in the refrigerator. And I just thought it would be so much easier. She wouldn't have to go to the Japanese market if I just got it for her in a pill. And then we'd know also how much she was having. And I actually tried to get some from Europe and send it to her, but they wouldn't ship to the US. So as a result, we then became, you know, the first into the market on spermidine, a standardized spermidine product. And I knew that it had a lot of promise, but that no pharmaceutical company was actually going to really get behind it because of the fact that it's a food, it can't be patented, and unlikely to really put their money, time, and effort behind it. I just felt it was a really worthy molecule. Doing, you know, anything that can inhibit aging, right? That has to be a good thing. And couldn't understand why no one else didn't want to put it on the market. So I thought, all right, I'll hold up my hand, I'll do it.
Had you guys tried a bunch of other compounds, molecules as well, or was this the one that you researched bringing to market?
It really was more of an opportunity that presented itself. And having been a patient and really wanting to have access to therapies and molecules that had been studied at the lab bench, but just were taking too long to filter down to doctors, I saw spermidine, I saw the research being done here at the University of Oxford in Katja Simon's lab and now in Gada Alsele's lab on spermidine rejuvenating the elderly immune system. And this was in mice, this was in human cells in a petri dish. And I saw that and I thought, this is so worthwhile. There's no downside to it because it's just a food. And yet nobody else is going to bring this to market. So I really should do it. But at that time, I was actually fundraising capital for Oxford University spinouts. So I was doing something totally different when the opportunity presented itself. And I thought, right, I need to find a way to get this, turn this into a company, because this is a really good thing to do. And I just could not, from a business point of view, I could not think of how to get it to market without a patent. That's how things work here. There's got to be a patent behind them, and there wasn't. Yeah. So I ended up deciding to take a risk and brand it with the Oxford HealthSpan name and seeing if that would work. The US, yeah, that's right. And Kutch has been working on this.
You guys are the first and original ones in the space to bring it to the US
now,
at least.
I think that her first patent on it came out in 2014, and she let it lapse. When you let a patent lapse, it becomes known as prior art. So at that time, the University of Oxford put the burden of funding these patents onto the scientist. And most scientists are like, I need to publish or perish. I'm busy working on this experiment. I have no time to raise the money for this. I have no time to even think about a company. I wouldn't know how to run a company. And so it lapsed. And that was a patent on using spermidine to potentiate vaccines in the elderly. Because vaccines tend in older individuals, and this would be sort of age 63, 64, 65 and older, the immune system doesn't raise antibodies usually as well as when we're younger. And that means that you might have some initial protection, but then you need to do shots again and again and again. And so that was the idea behind the patent, was that you could take the spermidine together with the, say, flu vaccine, and then you would be good for a longer period of time.
And it seems like that'd be a safer route than just, say, increasing the dose of the flu vaccine, because then you risk greater side effects and who knows if the efficacy will be there.
There may be a kind of Pareto curve of how much you can actually raise the body's response to it, right? I'm not an immunologist, so I simply don't know. But I could imagine that given those are the most vulnerable members of the population when a flu comes through, it does make sense to help them more, right? So, but sadly, that patent, that ship has sailed. That can never be done now.
Well, it can still be examined, possibly not under patent.
Yeah, not under patent. That's right.
Okay, so that's something that I don't think most of the other longevity molecules can boast about. How about other uses for it?
Well, so there have been human clinical trials done using spermidine to improve cognition. And one of the studies was done in about 6 different Alzheimer's homes. And another one was done with individuals who had subjective cognitive decline, who were sort of age 60 to 80, I believe that one. The Alzheimer's home patients were, I think, 60 to over 90, and showed improvement in both of those groups if they were taking spermidine daily. So that's on cognition. For heart health, the myocardiocytes preferentially take spermidine up for energy. And so the National Institutes of Health team at, I think, the NIA, National Institute on Aging at the NIH, wrote a wonderful paper that was just titled Spermidine : To the Rescue of an Aging Heart. And I thought, whoa, that's a nice title, you know? And again, what I think is great about that there's no downside to this, right? Some people say if you take some drugs for the heart, they complain that they feel very tired afterwards and they have to take CoQ10. Yeah. I'm not going to name any drugs, but you know, this is just a food. There's no downside with that. So that's on heart health. In addition, we know from epidemiological studies that the healthy centenarians in the longevity blue zones around the world tend to have higher blood plasma levels of spermidine, and they also have a huge intake of spermidine in their diets. So if you compare their spermidine serum levels to those of a young person, they're the same. And for me, that's kind of the holy grail, right? Yeah. I love the idea of becoming older as long as I'm definitely wiser and I don't look older, right? Older, wiser, but not looking older.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I like that. And these blue zone populations seem to have nailed that. Plant material has a lot of spermidine. For those listeners who are carnivores, you can get it in chicken liver. So that would be the place to get it into your diet if you're, you know, strictly carnivore.
Chicken liver. I wouldn't have chicken expected. Liver.
It's actually delicious. I love chicken liver.
Yeah, I do too. It's one of those that sounds kind of weird until you try it and you have it prepared properly. Yeah. Keyword is proper with all organ meats.
Yeah. Yeah. And quality, right? You want good quality. If you take a chicken liver from a chicken that's come from a terrible farmed, environment, the taste is completely different. And obviously the nutritional value isn't the same either.
Yeah. And also with animals, a lot of times, I think an average is like 6 to 7 times the amount of plant matter they eat in terms of their body weight. So it's that much more important to go organic and as high quality as possible when you eat meat than it is plants. But of course, go as high as quality as possible whenever.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
And one thing that caught my eye when we talked last is that you mentioned that there may have been references to spermidine a long time ago. And those were in something called the longevity scrolls.
So in Japanese, this is known as the Ishinho, and it is 30 scrolls that were written by a court physician to the Japanese emperor named Yoshiori Tamba. So at the end of the 10th century, Tamba comes to the end of his life and he decides to create his magnum opus using the books he brought with him from the Chinese court. He came from a family of doctors who were all physicians to the Emperor of China. He looked through his books that went back to medical practices over 1,000 years prior, and he literally extracted paragraphs on how to live a healthy life. In addition, he dedicated 3 of the 30 scrolls to long life. And they go into diet and lifestyle, but one of them specifically has to do with longevity and sexual intimacy. Now, what people might not know about me is that 20 years ago, back in China, when I was living in Hong Kong, I had an online matchmaking company. I did a lot of work to get my matchmaking website into China, which involved me working with the Chinese government as a sexologist with a bunch of other sexologists to teach good and safe sex. Safe sex for the government of China, good sex to make sure the readers were interested. And I was introduced to some of these longevity through sexual intimacy practices at that time. They go back to Taoism and Tantra. You may have heard about things like seminal retention, where a man doesn't ejaculate, but instead is in such a transcendent meditative state, and he slowly builds up to this, that instead of orgasm mean with an ejaculation, he has a bit of an internal orgasm. And that process is described in the longevity scrolls. And what Professor Dennis Noble, who's a physiologist at the University of Oxford, and I thought when we looked at that scroll was, Right. Spermidine. You are meditating. The man is getting extremely aroused. So the body is thinking, produce a lot of semen for the next generation, creation of the next generation. And by going very slowly, the man does this great trick where instead of losing that essence, and we know semen has a lot of important things in it, from glutathione to magnesium, zinc, vitamin C, and spermidine. Mm-hmm. Instead of losing that, you just amp up production, and then it is actually brought back into the body where it can be used systemically. So the scrolls discuss men who are able to perform like this one time, having clear eyesight. If you can do this twice, you have clear hearing. Do this three times, your mind is clear. And this goes on and on until you do this 10 times and you're immortal. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a bit of poetic license involved in that. But what we believe is that Tamba, taking these instructions, which actually date back to the 6th century, taking those instructions he observed as court physician many men who would have had access to many women and could see who was able to perform this trick. And those who were able to do this appeared younger, lived longer, and had fewer ailments. So that's really exciting that he was able to observe this already in the 10th century. But if we then fast forward 1,000 years to 2016, when the Nobel Prize was awarded in medicine or physiology to Professor Osumi of Japan, who proved the mechanism of action of autophagy, we like to think that Tamba and Osumi are part of the same line of scientist, someone who observed autophagy in action through seminal retention, absorption of spermidine, and Osumi in 2016, who's able to show in mammals that autophagy is important to longevity and explains the mechanism of action of it.
Wow.
I have a couple of thoughts on that. I think that there's a Taoist teaching, it's like a formula, at least for men, about correct. How often they should ejaculate. It's like...
correct.
And I think when I calculated it a while ago, it was like every 5 days for me. But like, do you know what that is? And
yes, you're absolutely right. And you're going to have to write the formula in the show notes, because as a woman, I'm sorry, I pay no attention to it.
Understandable.
But that's correct. And the thing that's important to remember is that, one, it's not every day. You're very young. I don't know how old you are, but you look very young. And it's still once every 5 days. As you get older, the trend is for less and less ejaculation. And that just makes sense, because the Japanese have shown that as we get older, Rubicon, this protein, accumulates in the body and inhibits spermidine production in our tissues. So if at the age of 80, a man ejaculates, he is losing something which takes a very long time for his body to actually produce. Mm-hmm. Now, I have talked about those centenarians in the blue zones who have blood serum levels of spermidine similar to those of young people. You could potentially just get a lot of supplemental spermidine in your diet or in supplement form to make up for loss through ejaculation. But I would then also add in things like zinc, magnesium, glutathione as well, if you were going to do something like that.
Yeah, the problem with that, as I see it, is that many cultures throughout time have all espoused the importance of like sexual transmutation of energy. Like when you don't ejaculate, you're able to build it up, and then you're able to turn that into passion projects, to new ideas, to all kinds of cool things. And that by constantly draining those reserves, you might be able to take a lot of the supplements and compounds to get those back up there. But what if there's another spermidine-like compound that we haven't discovered in 5 years? We might.
I do think that's right. So it takes a lot of practice to be able to do this. And it's not as simple. I used to think it was possible to just press on the perineum. The man could do this himself, or his partner could do it to prevent ejaculation. But speaking to a physiologist like Dennis, he's saying, it might then just be excreted, urinated out. And I thought, oh, that's a terrible way. And when you do this, when you're able to do this energetically, it is different. And men that I know who have been able to do this say it feels different. It's kind of like a, you know, an internal juddering or slight earthquake. You feel inside as opposed to an external release, right?
Yeah. And I don't need to get too much into my whole sex life, but I can agree that it is a very different feeling. And it's one that once you experience, you understand why they make those claims.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of it has to do with achieving an altered state. And if you're with a partner and doing this, we know that there are a lot of hormones that are actually manufactured when, say, a mother is breastfeeding her baby because of that eye contact, right? And oxytocin is raised, other hormones are manufactured, feel-good hormones. And between two partners that love each other, when you are going slowly like that, the altered state is completely transcendent. It is very different. It's not slam, bam, thank you, ma'am.
Okay, so let's shift gears back towards spermidine. Clearly, this may be one way of hedging your bets. And if you have to ejaculate more often, then you can take spermidine and possibly cap some of the consequences of that. But if I was to go on the market right now and I was to have no idea what to look for, I see a bunch of shiny labels.
Yeah.
If I flip them over, what would I look for? How would I know if I'm getting a good spermidine product or if it's just an average run-of-the-mill, possibly blank supplement?
Right. So there are a couple of ways of doing this. One, if you get it made in an FDA registered facility, those facilities have internal, R&D and quality control groups that have to look at the certificate of analysis of the raw material that comes in, and it will say what the spermidine content is. So that has to be checked by a lab that is recognized by these organizations. And so we do our checking in Japan, and there are a few other labs. There are not a lot of labs in the world that actually measure for this. So I would look for FDA registration. I would check the fillers that are used and go for as few fillers as possible. So things like talc, I don't find necessary personally. I don't want to ingest them, but they are used in the industry to make things like spermidine extracted from wheat germ. They make them heavier because it's like a powder, a very fine powder. And the talc is heavy, and it actually allows you to squish more raw material into capsules. Mm-hmm. And so I would look at that. I would also look to see if they include anything to get your body to manufacture spermidine itself. So as far as I know, we're the only company in the world manufacturing spermidine together with a prebiotic. The prebiotic is there to help your gut biome manufacture it. So we get it from three places. from our diet, from our tissue production, and from our gut biome. Now, I mentioned that Rubicon can inhibit the amount that our tissues produce as we get older. But the gut biome is still capable of doing this. So our prebiotic feeds two of the bacteria that manufacture spermidine. And just potentiating that, you know, tripping the flywheel on your own body's ability to manufacture this is great. It's kind of, again, harnessing that internal pharmacopoeia, the body's innate knowledge of how to manufacture its own chemicals to repair itself.
Yeah. Are the prebiotics like proprietary information?
Ours is proprietary, but you could, you know, fiber of any kind is good, not just for regular elimination, but it does feed those gut bacteria. So I would urge anyone, you know, don't just take the, you know, you want to have, say, shiitake mushrooms. I wouldn't just say only supplement, but eat some of these other product, you know, not products, other vegetables that have spermidine in them. Get more peas into your diet. Get more shiitake mushrooms. Cheese, it does have spermidine. It's a bit of a double-edged sword because some people have issues with dairy. They might have the ApoE4 SNP that predisposes them to Alzheimer's, in which case dairy is like a no-go. But all these other things should be fine for people. And I would encourage everyone to get that in there just because the dietary fiber is going to feed the gut bacteria.
Yeah. And have you heard of a, I think it's called a bacteria called LMK512?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you can, yes. And you can get it in Japan.
Yeah. I'm interested in making some of my own yogurt and then adding that bacteria to.
I think that's a good idea. I think that's a really, really good idea. Not everyone seems to tolerate it so well. So the Japanese seem to, it seems to be okay for them. I do know people who have gotten it, Westerners who have gotten it, who've said, you know, they've had some gastric upset. I'm not sure why that is. I do know when I did a gut biome course at the University of Colorado and UCSD, and I had to examine my own gut biome, which turns out to be almost identical to that of the average Japanese. And it had these bacteria to break down seaweed, which Westerners don't have, mostly don't have. So maybe it's some variation in our guts that does not lead to gastric upset with that.
Yeah. And one other thing about buying spermidine products, there's a difference in where the spermidine comes from.
True. So there are some synthetics. There are some that come from Wheatsherm. Ours comes from Wheatsherm, highly refined Wheatsherm. And you can, I know that there are some products out there that come from soy. What you'd want to be looking for really is the amount of spermidine that is in there. So we use 1 milligram, and we've got a new product coming out that has 1.2 milligrams. All the studies in humans have been done around that 1 milligram mark. And the European Food Safety Authority, EFSA, has said that you should take in no more than 6 milligrams of supplemental spermidine per day. Although I know that there are companies that are starting to come out with 10 milligrams and it's synthetic, and I'm thinking, I'm not sure about that because that's never been tested in humans, right? So the other thing about Wheatsherm is that it has all three of the polyamines in the spermidine recycling loop. So spermine, spermidine, and putrescine. Terrible names, all of them. Spermine was the original crystal that Antony van Leeuwenhoek, the father of modern biology, saw in the 17th century when he put his own semen under a slide in the microscope, as you would do as you were looking around the lab for what can I look at?
Yeah, obviously.
What am I curious about? My saliva, my urine, my, you know, semen, fine. So spermine was something he identified then. And there are studies that show that if you have spermine and spermidine together, that they actually help reduce cortisol in the body, increase testosterone, DHEA, pregnenolone, which are precursor hormones to testosterone, but also estradiol and progesterone. So if you get just pure spermidine, you won't get the benefit of either the recycling loop or of that hormone balancing benefit that seems to be there. And the other thing is that some things like chlorella, for instance, only has spermidine and putrescine. So again, no spermine. But wheat germ does. So these are some of the things that you might think about.
They should.
It's something, interestingly enough, we do not say that we have spermine and putrescine, but we really should. And because we do have all three, any wheat germ derived supplement should have all three. And yes, that's a good point. I'm going to have to change that. Thank you, Nick.
If someone buys a chlorella-based form of spermidine, is it possible that for them to add back in the missing
spermidine?
Yeah.
I don't know where you would get just that from. That's the problem.
I see.
Right? So now, bearing in mind that the animal studies have been done with spermidine, there should be a positive impact. But I think it's not going to be as positive as having all three together, personally. On the other hand, if you go with a chlorella-based product, you will find that those individuals who are celiac, this is something they can take, right?
Yes.
So for them, or for those with SIBO or leaky gut, or who are simply very gluten sensitive and cannot take the wheat germ derived version, even though it has just a small amount of gluten, they would have to go the chlorella or the soy route.
Mm-hmm. And you guys only offer
at the moment we have the wheat germ derived spermidine, but we are about to launch a chlorella based product. So that will be out at the end of February.
Okay. Leslie, we've been talking for a while now. I want to be respectful of your time. I have a bunch more questions for you, but I guess I'll pare my list down to a select number. If someone in the audience is interested in connecting with you and picking up some of their own spermidine, where do they go about that?
Go to www.oxfordhealthspan.com, and we sell all over the world, so it shouldn't be a problem to find us. And if they're interested in learning more about the Oxford Longevity Project, which has really looked at autophagy and how this impacts illness as we age, they should go to oxfordlongevityproject.org. If they'd like to see my YouTube videos, I have a very fun, casual YouTube channel called Leslie's New Prime. And there I talk about all the fun stuff like reversing gray hair. So I have no gray hair and I'm almost 57. And I talk about that. I talk about reversing hair loss and other topics that people are interested in as they hit their, you know, the end of their 50s and beyond. So you can find me there as well as on Instagram.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that in rapid fire round, some of your coffee secrets. But Leslie has been gracious enough to offer MindBody Peak Performance listeners an exclusive discount on spermidine products. If you use code URBAN10, that saves you 10%, I think, site-wide.
Correct. The only thing it doesn't get you a discount on are the subscriptions, which are already heavily discounted, but everything else, yes.
Yep. And like always, the links to this will be in the show notes. Leslie, let's start to wrap things up and go to some of the questions that I ask all guests.
Okay.
Imagine that all information on Earth is lost. You get to save three works of any kind. What would you choose? And why?
I would definitely choose the I Ching Ho, those 30 scrolls, because of their contribution to medical science. And then I would also choose all of PubMed. I'm going to call that a corpus of work.
Yes.
And then I would save the works of William Shakespeare. As I'm not too far from Stratford-on-Avon, I feel that necessary for me to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a popular choice. You're in good company. Okay, so now imagine that you were to design a board of virtual mentors that can be any people from any time, and you pass all your most important life decisions through them to see their thoughts and possibly alter what you choose. Who would you choose and why?
I would definitely choose Dennis Noble, the physiologist and mentor to me here at Oxford. I would choose, because of his work on systems biology, but also looking at problems in a systems fashion. I would choose the Dalai Lama as well. And I do love his quote saying that never think that you're too small to make a difference. Anyone who has ever been in a room overnight with a mosquito knows the impact that can have. I would also want Yoshiori Tamba, the author of the I Ching Ho, because his knowledge was so deep about East Asian practices, and these have mostly been lost.
Yeah.
Then the Nobel laureate Yoshiori Osumi, who won for autophagy, and definitely the artist Hokusai, who did the Great Wave at the end of his life. And yet it is so iconic. And I think that anyone who says, oh, I'm 65, I'm too old, I think, well, if we said that about him, we never would have that great work of art.
Yeah.
So all of them.
Well, hopefully with spermidine, 65 won't be.
I hope that's the new,
even close
that's
to too old.
35.
Hopefully that'll be the midway point. Yeah. Wow. So you're gonna have to help me out with some of those names, because my spelling, my Japanese spelling, isn't what it should be.
Absolutely. Not a problem. I can do that afterwards.
Okay. We'll go on to the rapid fire round now. What are you most interested in and researching these days?
I'm looking at a lot of, in addition to the autophagy inducers, I'm also looking at photobiomodulation, which I like a lot. So red light. And I was talking to somebody about this product. This is an intraoral device. You put it in your mouth. And dentists are using this right now. It actually moves teeth twice as fast as traditional Invisalign. You only have to use it 5 minutes a day. So this whole idea of red light for cellular revitalization is so interesting to me. You know, whether that is for, you know, for skin, for facials, for, you know, anything from vaginal rejuvenation to, you know, backaches, all of it. You know, I just think it's amazing how the cells respond in all of these areas, because they're very different, right? Okay, the oral mucosa and the vaginal mucosa would be very similar, but we know that it also works topically on skin. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very into that at the moment. I'm always looking at blood flow restriction. You know, if you've looked at my Instagram from even a few years ago, I've always loved the Japanese katsu bands. I just think blood flow moderation is, or restriction is, such a great way to build muscle, especially as we age. And you can watch the videos online of people who are 104 years old, how their posture changes, how their gait changes, how they're, you know, just, you can see the muscles. They are able to just hold themselves up better. And so I'm
I'm convinced that's the best health and fitness investment one can make, especially in the fitness side. And I was part of a very progressive gym back when I was training for college football. I think it was like 2011, 2012. And they were already using Katsu back then. And it's been making waves.
But that was in Southern California, right?
That was for high school, part of my high school training program.
Okay. Wow. That's amazing. Well, a lot of stuff starts in California first and then fans out to the rest of the nation. But I love the Katsu guys. I was just in Orange County and just met up with Steve Minotonis, the CEO there. And it's, you know, the growth hormone stimulation. But again, we're stimulating the body's own production of growth hormone. Yep. That's fantastic. Not only is it cheaper than injecting yourself with $1,000 syringe, but it's going to be safer because the body is going to have its own internal limits, right? And this is again why I like the idea of a prebiotic and spermidine. Potentiate your body's own ability to manufacture the stuff. And the body kind of knows when to stop. So I was talking to Steve about just some amazing results that they're getting with Katsu. And it almost seems like stem cells are being promoted, provoked when using this, because they use it with a lot of vets, a lot of guys who come back with battle injuries and might have lost all sensation to their legs. They can only use Katsu on their arms. And then after a month, they're saying, hey, I've got some sensation in my lower limbs, which they're not technically supposed to have. So it's
one of those that has so much upside and virtually zero downside. And I'm actually supposed to have an interview with John Doolittle and
I love John. Yeah.
And Richard.
Oh, and Richard Hairston. Yep.
I can't remember if it was Richard or Chris. No, it was Chris.
Oh, okay. And I've met him too. No, John and I have known each other for a long time, and he is amazing, right? Mm-hmm. Just wonderful former Navy SEAL. Very kick-ass person.
Tell me about your coffee. You have a special ingredient in your coffee that I wasn't aware of.
That would be the fo tea or hushuo. So this is a traditional Chinese herb that is known as a longevity herb. And it, in particular, it's known for preventing gray hair. So I take it not all year round. You've got to take breaks because it does seem to have high levels of iron in it. So we don't want to get too much iron in the body. Otherwise, that's toxic for the liver. But I will put in a heat teaspoonful of fo tea or hushuo into my coffee. And I'll add in my collagen, my MCT creamer, and I also put in a little bit of raw cacao in there too, just for the extra magnesium boost. And I think maybe there's something to it because we've noticed with lockdown, so many women initially went around with these raccoon stripes. And there were so many women, I didn't know that they dyed their hair. I just thought everybody was like me and at this age didn't have to dye their hair. But there were young women who were sort of astonished. How could I not be dyeing my hair? So I think fo tea is probably part of it, and the spermidine. Oh no, it is. Well, I like bitter. Combo.
But is your coffee still consumable?
I can't remember which botanist it was who said, eat bitter for a sweet life. And I like the taste of bitter things, so I don't mind it. But maybe I have a strange sense of taste. I also don't mind liposomal glutathione. And a lot of people hate that.
Yeah, I just released a podcast with a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner, and we were talking about how the different tastes, including bitter, are essential for like balance in life and in diet, and how when you get that, you can a lot of times cravings and different things will disappear.
Yeah, exactly. And Conversely, you know, fructose, too much fructose. There is this great work out of the University of Colorado, Richard Johnson's group, that is showing that in some people, high fructose intake kind of overwhelms their leptin sensitivity, and they just produce more and more ghrelin, the gorge hormone, so that they're sort of, they begin to almost forage and they eat too much. So yeah, bitter for me all the way.
Great. Okay, Leslie, what is one thing that your tribe does not know about you?
Right. I think now people know about me having been named the high priestess of sex in China. So I'm trying to think what else. They're so boring. I was California state champion in debate in high school. Maybe that is something they don't know. Yeah, okay. That's a bit boring.
Sexologist and debater. Okay, well, let's wrap this up. Are there any final parting thoughts you have for everyone that if they take away nothing, maybe their volume is down, they turn it back up for this last segment?
I guess I want everyone to remember that our bodies are infinitely wise if we give them the opportunity to be. And that means not inundating the body with too much stress or toxins, with high fructose corn syrup or bad fats. But really, the body always strives to be put into balance. And just give your body a second chance and watch it do miraculous things.
Yeah, that's a great, great final message. Leslie, thank you so much for joining us today on Mind Body Peak Performance. It's been fun chatting and getting to know you.
Yeah, it was really fun. And you asked the most amazing questions.
Thank you. Well, I'm Nick Urban here with Leslie Kenny, signing out from mindbodypeak.com. Have a great week and be an outlier. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.